Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. It's me, Sharifa Hardy. I am here to entertain you, and it's Friday, TGIF. So I don't know what's going to happen, what I'm going to say, because I always let you know Friday is my most unscripted show of the week. Monday through Thursday, I try to be a little calm. I try to be a little politically correct. Fridays, who knows what I'm going to say. But I have brought you an interesting panel of guests today. I know you're going to be educated. You're going to be entertained. We're going to learn something. We're going to share. We're just going to have a good time here this morning on the Roundtable Talk Show. But before we get too far in the show, I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do. And that's right. I told you yesterday, but I'm going to tell you a little stronger today because we didn't wake up enough people. I need you to go wake your friends up. It's 8 o'clock in the morning. They're trying to sleep in Southern California. Go wake them up, tweet them, call them, send them a message, send them a LinkedIn, whatever it is, send them an Instagram message, inbox them on Facebook, but let your friends know that the Roundtable Talk Show is live. We are live right now coming to you in real time, and we know that friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So while you're getting your friends, I'm going to go ahead and introduce our first guest, Mr. Trevor Rappelein, and he is the CEO and founder of CorporateFilming.net as well as EventFilming.net. Good morning, Trevor. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
You are so welcome. Thank you for joining me. We were talking a little bit backstage about you and some of the things that you have going on, and you're doing a lot for a young man.
we were talking offline, and yeah, I just turned 30. I'm excited about it. And it's been a journey scaling the company, ups and downs. I wouldn't change it for the world. So.
Well, yes, but even 30, you know, you're an adult. Like, you officially are responsible for your choices. You know, in your 20s, everybody's like, he was 20. That's what I say. At least that's how I justify all the wild, crazy things. I'm like, I was 20. You know, at 44, it doesn't work the same way, but not everybody at your age or not everybody at any age wants to take on some of the projects that you have taken on. You started your own business, you founded a company, and your focus is on event filming and corporate filming. So Trevor, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Yeah, so back in 2003, I fell in love with my dad's big VHS camera. You know, back in the day, it had to go on your shoulder. And I fell in love with that. And that's when I realized I loved to film. So literally, it's actually on our website, I think. There's some old family videos. I would film my family's ping pong matches like every week. And I would do a news, news thing on them. And I just fell in love with that. So, and I had my first company DVDs to remember.net. I was converting VHS to disc, and at 13, making $20 a disc, I thought I was on top of the world. So then I fell in love with that aspect, right? And so really what we do is we film events and we help businesses tell their story, because I feel like that is so underrated. And I really believe a lot of sales don't go through because people don't know you. So that's really what we try and do, is we tell the story of the business unscripted. And I think that love comes from my authentic raw moments as a kid filming family game nights and all that stuff.
That's wonderful, because I think that's what I like to do here at the Roundtable Talk Show or any of my shows, is just get the story behind the business. So that's why we talk to the people and we learn about I can just go to a website, but I don't know you, Trevor. I don't know who you are. But how do you get the story of a business as opposed to just going to a business and shooting a commercial?
So I love that question. And my answer is, don't use scripts. Right. Okay. I just like how we're live right now. If we fumble, we go on. If my dog walks in, we keep going. Right. It's just, I feel like, especially during COVID, authenticity is very in now more than ever. So being able to tell a story unscripted, for example, if someone wants to tell a business story, do not do not write a script. Talk about what you went through. Talk about how you help people. Talk about it. Just talk about your real authentic life and the passion for what you do. And then send that video, photo in every single lead that you get. And that's really what has helped us, is we highlight our story and the love for what we do before we talk about what we sell.
That's beautiful. Now, based on what you said with the passion and why you do what you do, do you feel, and I believe the answer to this question is yes, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Do you feel that that can apply to any business? Like, for instance, my dad's owned his own plumbing business, Jordan's Rooter and Plumbing, since 1985 in California. You know, and I've always wanted to get him to expand and do different things. Like, let's share the story. He's like, I'm a plumber. I do plumbing. You know, and it's like, how do you get them to get to their story?
So I think we all forget, including me, that when people reach out to buy from us, they are not reaching out just to us. They never are, right? You're one of 10 people that they send an email to and says, how much do you cost, right? And everyone's going to write back with, this is what I cost. So for that, when you first said that, I would love, is there like a photo of his first day on the job or his first office? Plop that on the homepage. And even like this, do just a 90 second him talking raw about, hey, I'm XYZ. Hey, I love what I do. Here's my family. Here's my kids. And so it's not about what he does. It's about why he does it. And I feel like people constantly forget that unless someone likes us or you or them or you, that sale will never go through and your business can never go off, right? So you have to put your face on the website, even if it's a low resolution photo of you and your dog. Just, who am I talking to? And I feel like that's how I would tackle that, is find an old photo, get him on the website somehow.
I love that. And I'm gonna move on, but I just one more quick question, because I'm enjoying this. I have found, as a business consultant, that often there are business owners who say, I don't want people to know who I am. I don't want to be famous. I don't want to be popular. I just want them to buy my tools or whatever else it is. How do you get someone to understand the importance of having their face out there and people know who the owner is?
So if you are nervous or you're afraid to get your face out there, that actually makes me want you to post even more, because authenticity, I think now, if I was in a suit and tie and makeup and a light, and it wouldn't really play right now. People appreciate the authenticity. So how I would revert that back to that person that doesn't want to put their story and their face on the website, I would really want to go deeper and ask, why is that? Like, are there some vulnerabilities? Are you nervous? But to sum up what I'm saying is, if you don't highlight you, you're going to look like everybody else that does what you do. And an example that I give people is, type into Google what you sell and see how many pages and pages of search results there are. In my space, there's 32 million people, articles, websites, when I type in video marketing. So it's like, how do you stand out? And the way that you do is getting your story out there.
I love it. So that's information that we need for business owners, for leaders in their field. So I'm going to go ahead and introduce our next guest plural. And I love when we change it up a little bit, but we have two business partners who work together, and they are here today joining us, Jen Cohen and Gina LaRoche. And they're going to talk about Seven Stones Leadership and they advance the practice of leadership. Good morning, Jen. How are you?
I'm well, Sharifa. Thanks for having us.
You are welcome. Good morning, Gina. How are you?
I'm well, Sharifa. Thank you again for opening this space for us and for your listeners.
Oh, you are so welcome. What's interesting to me in any partnership, you always, to me, and this is just me, just being me, because it's Friday, I just say whatever I want to, but you always seem to find the talkative one or the dominant one or that personality. So I'm like, okay, which one is which? And I'm kind of figuring that Gina is more of the talkative one. I don't know. I was wrong, Jen. Jen gave me a look. So I was guessing.
You are right. I'm the talkative one. I heard you, I think it was yesterday, say that you talked a lot as a child.
Yes.
And that was and then you're a talk show host. I was laughing because I was like, oh, that's me. Yeah, I'm the extrovert talker. And it works well. I think we balance off each other quite well. You know, sometimes it's trained me sometimes like, oh, let me pause and hear what Jen has to say. It also helps that I'm married to a pretty intense introvert, and I've been trained that you need to shut the mouth so they can start thinking about how to respond to you. Mm-hmm. So we have found a very good balance, I think, between the two of us.
That's what makes any successful partnership work, is that balance. Now, Jen, you gave me a look. I saw the look. I saw it. I was watching. Jen was like, oh my God, Jen, are you the talkative one?
Well, I know why Gina answered the way she answered. When we're in public settings like this, or doing a radio interview about our book, or leading a workshop, I think people would vote for me as the talkative one, and I have to shut my mouth a little bit. But Gina would often say she doesn't mind that I'm the talkative one in that space.
Okay.
But she is more, she thinks out loud, and okay. I can think out loud with her, but I also don't have to in the same way she does. So I know why she answered the way she did, but I thought you were going to say it was me that was the talkative one. So there you go. You learned something new, 12 years. And I didn't know she was going to say that.
See, that's what I'm here to do. I'm here to bring the information, enlighten people what's going on in their world. You know,
exactly.
I'm trying not to cause too much trouble, though. I don't need Jen and good. Gina. Yes. So tell us about, okay, Jen, because I like to break up the questions. Tell us about your company. Tell us about what you do.
Well, in the simplest language, we're a professional services firm. We are provide executive coaching, leadership development services, consulting services, etc. But if you were to go a layer underneath that, we have a pretty strong commitment to a world that works for all and not a few. And given the moment we're in, we're seeing just how few it works for on multitude of levels. And so all of our work is slanted toward a conversation about a sustainable world, a bountiful world, but not a bountiful world in the absence of an ethical and just and reciprocal or sustainable world. So that's the nutshell version of what we do and what we provide to people.
Yes, Gina, what would you like to add?
Gina.
Oh, she summed it up well. We also do a lot of thinking and thought leadership. We did write a book called The Seven Laws of Enough to help our clients and folks who are with us.
It was on number one.
Yeah.
I don't want to see that again. Can you put it back?
Yeah.
The Seven Laws of Enough. Okay. I'm learning. Yeah.
And we also, I would say, are one of our superhero powers is we're really great thought partners with our clients in all domains. And even though we have a shingle out for leadership coaching and consulting, you know, people, the whole person arrives in the office and we work with everything that's happening in our lives, regardless of where they are in the organization.
Do you have meetings together, or do you just one of you has a client and the next one takes up the next client? How does it work?
Yes and no. So we do each have our own clients, and we have a number of coaches who work with us and do work one-on-one. And the thing we do well is if a client has some need that's more in Jen's specialty wheelhouse, they will come and spend some time with Jen and vice versa. We also offer in-person training programs that used to be live where we would bring clients together and they would learn together specific topics. And now really as a COVID, part of the COVID pivot we did, we now have a virtual community where all of our clients can come together and continue on their learning journey together, and they still work with their coach one-on-one.
Okay, so Jen, can you give us a few or a couple of the laws? We know we have to read the book, but what are just a couple of things to look forward to?
Well, I wonder if I can say the laws without saying, providing a little bit of a context, but law number one is stories matter. And that's in reference to the layers of narratives or contexts in which human beings live, and the way that that context is shaping what we think, what we believe, and how we act and how we behave. That's law number one. Mm-hmm. Law number two, hence the title of the book, is I am enough. Mm-hmm. And we would say that one of the dominant forces in our world, or one of the dominant narratives, is a narrative of lack or scarcity. And that travels from the personal, a sense of unworthiness, the way somebody like Brené Brown would talk about it, or Tara Brach would talk about it, all the way to all of the structural inequities, which are being blown up for all to see in living color. That's the second law, is I'm enough. And I could go on and I could tell you all seven laws, but that's number one and number two.
You want to tell us all seven laws? Because I'm taking
notes. Of course we want to tell you all seven laws. You said we could come on here and shamelessly plug our work. I'll go for number three, and then Gina, you grab your book and make sure you remember 4, 5, 6, and 7, baby.
I got them all right here.
You
got
them. Okay, right, before you start, I'm sorry, Gina. I'm going to have to agree with Jen. Like, I think I'm starting to feel like Jen is more of the talkative one right now at this moment. Jen, I'm voting for Jen. I don't know who else is a vote. I'm voting for Jen right now.
Okay, so law number three, where am I? Three is I belong. And in the dominant narrative, it is very obvious, especially right now, that we have a hierarchy of belonging. And what we would say is, one of the things we like to say, and I will just say this, is leaders create context. That's one of the things leaders do. They invent narratives for a future that's not already in place. And we can think about leaders like Gandhi and King, all kinds of leaders who invented a space that was not in reality yet. And we were brazen and obnoxious enough to do the same thing and said, there is this other context, and that is something we call, a lot of people call it different things and they're still pointing in the same direction, but we call it sustainable abundance. And mm-hmm. what we say is, if you're in that context, these seven laws apply. And in the context of scarcity, there are other things that apply, like what we're seeing on a global level. Who gets to exist? Who gets to breathe? Who gets to be here? All of those things exist in the dominant context. And we say that context is not capable of sustaining life. The context of sustainable abundance is. So law number three is I belong. And what we are brazen enough to say is that's the truth. What we're being shown and told and what we've been living in and the context that we're currently in is delusional and filled with lies. And the truth is we all belong here and nobody gets to say that we don't, no matter who we are. That's law number three. Gina?
Nice law.
Wow.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We like law, it.
Yeah, and law number four is also very important right now. Law number four is no one is exempt. And I like to say no one is exempt, not even me. And a lot of times, particularly in the virus, we saw like, well, it's over there, it's not coming here. you know, oh, it's in this, whatever, I'm not going to get sick, or I don't have to do this. And I live in a town right now where we have to wear a mask in public 100% of the time. And it's getting warm and it's annoying. And I have to say to myself, the law doesn't say everyone has to wear a mask except for Gina LaRoche. I am part of that. So I am not exempt from this. We think if we do good things, and sometimes if we, you know, wiggle our nose and do different things, like, we shouldn't get cancer. We shouldn't get laid off. We shouldn't get in that car accident. But we all are in this system together, and no one is exempt from loss, from death, from illness. And I think to see that, and I think for me, the virus in particular has really helped me see that even in the environmental degradation, this does impact me. Like, I can now see it in a new way. So then law number 5 is just resting is required. And when we talk about resting, we're talking more than, you know, like the wine and the, you know, Netflix. Not like that's bad, but we're talking about wine. And the popcorn. Not that that's bad, but that's not what we're talking about in this domain. It's the resting of the nervous system, the allowing you to drop and settle into yourself, and the practices that allow for the positive emotional attractors to be stimulated, which again are critical in this moment. And those are exercises like meditation and non-combative martial arts and prayer to a loving God. So there's a lot, petting a pet, you know, it's no accident that there's no dogs left in the shelters, because petting a pet actually stimulates the positive emotional attractors and calms that nervous system. And law number 6 is joy is available. Jen and I take ourselves very, very seriously, and we forget that joy and humor and laughter, and like Sharifa, you know, you're like, this is Friday. Out of my mouth. We're going to have some fun here. And it's like, the world is on fire. I mean, I was in tears this morning over what's happening, and there's humor is here. Joy is here. As the Buddhist would say, there are 10,000 joys available along with the 10,000 sorrows. And then finally, law number 7, which a lot of times I say really is probably the only law, is that love is the answer.
Yes. Yes, I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
That's what my message was, I believe, was on Monday, because I had a very, I don't like the word stressful because I don't really believe in stress. But I was thinking a lot this weekend about everything going on in the world. And then I knew I had to do the show on Monday. And so it was like, okay, how much do I want to talk about on the show? How far do I want to go? Are people going to want to talk about it? Are people not going to want to talk about it? You know, so it was that kind of sense of trepidation of, I don't know, you know, I don't want to talk too much. And then my guests are like, that's not what we came to talk about, but I don't want to give it the, but I don't want to ignore it. So my guests are like, well, you got to discuss the elephant in the room. So all of these thoughts were going through my weekend. And then this week, I just kind of just went with it. It's been wonderful. People have been expressing themselves, their thoughts, their feelings. I've expressed mine, but I put out a message on Monday on my social media, on all my pages, and it discussed a lot of my feelings. But at the end, I just said, you know what? No matter what, love wins. And on Monday, yeah. I wore my love shirt. And then that's what it was about. At the end of the day, all of those things, you sum it up and it goes back to love. Now, I want to go ahead and introduce my next guest, who, I don't know, he may have different feelings about that. He's in a whole different world, you know, but I want to introduce Mr. Greg Scott, who is in cyber safety, and he has a new book, Virus Bomb. Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing real well, Sharifa. Thanks. And I'm on board. Love wins. You know, and the elephant in the room. I live in the Twin Cities, so a lot of this stuff is local to me. And
yes,
I've seen some incredible acts of kindness after the horrific video we all watched a couple weeks ago. And, you know, I broke down and bawled my eyes out Thursday. I'm Mr. Cybersecurity, stoic, black and white, got to do business. And I broke down and bawled in front of my coworkers. I would say it was embarrassing, but it wasn't. It is what it is. But I've also seen.
I said it's probably refreshing to have that release of those feelings and those emotions.
No, I don't know how refreshing it is, but it just is. I saw an incredible act of cruelty, and I saw lots and lots and lots of incredible acts of kindness following that act of cruelty. And I also saw some opportunist based on taking advantage of a disaster and a tragedy. And I saw a whole lot of other people stand up against it. So yeah, as the cliche goes, you know, we've seen the best and the worst of humanity. I think we're going to come out of this pain and be better for it. So that, there's the elephant in the room.
Well, thank you.
Well, because thank you.
We had to get that out there. But also, you know, on an ordinary, regular day, not just with everything going on in the world, you are one of the people that protect us or that help protect all of us, because we don't have to be as concerned about cyber safety because we have people such as yourself.
Well, that's not true. You do need to be concerned. People such as myself. You should be. I can teach you things. I can teach the world things for anybody that wants to listen. And back in 2014, I got really, really, really frustrated with people losing my personal information. Because you should Gina and Jen, add this in your law. I tell people what's good for Greg is good for the USA, because I'm just selfish. And so we all are kind of selfish, but most of us don't admit it.
I admit it all the time. I'm beautiful. Here to learn.
So these guys lost my data. It was my data that they lost. And that's even worse than losing your data. That's a little bit tongue in cheek. So because my data is more important to me. Anyway, they lost my data, and I decided I'm going to do something about it. And I was a wannabe writer for a long time. And so I set out as a rookie author to write a book about cybersecurity.
Can I cut you off? I didn't mean to cut you off, but I don't understand when you say they lost my data.
You buy stuff online. Everybody buys stuff at stores, right?
Yes.
And when you go to the store, you give them your credit card number.
Yes.
And so they keep a copy of your credit card number. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is bad guys around the world get inside those stores and they steal your credit card numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they steal your social security number. Sometimes they steal your driver's license numbers. Sometimes they steal your all kinds of information about you. There's attackers from around the world that do this stuff. There's a thriving underground market for stolen credit card numbers. And there's a whole economic supply chain. There are specialists who do the attacks. There are specialists who run the websites that keep the list of credit card numbers. There's buyers and sellers. There's researchers who come up with innovative ways to attack. Just like in the real economy, in this bad guy underground economy, any specialist you want for any kind of an attack you want, if you know where to look, you can find and engage such a person to mount an attack. It would blow your mind. And that credit card that spills over into other activities such as terrorism and such as taking advantage of a horrific murder and those kinds of things. But the same markets and the same groups of specialists that coordinate themselves to steal from people can do the same things to do even worse and more heinous crimes. And so I see some of the fringes of that in my world. But back in 2014, I was mostly frustrated because somebody lost some of my data in one of these cyber attacks. And I and I've And I set out to explore my writing career. And so I wrote a book called Bullseye Breach, Anatomy of an Electronic Break-In. And it's a novel. Sometimes we can use fiction to present truth better than the news. And so many of these places would not own up to what went wrong. What did we do wrong? How did we fix it? What did we learn? How do we fix it so it doesn't happen again? Well, nobody would own up to that in public. They all hid behind where it's an ongoing investigation. We're not authorized to talk about it. Well, that's a load of hogwash. And so Bullseye Breach, I use fiction to examine how a data breach would really happen. So there is a fictional retailer in Minneapolis named Bullseye Stores, and they lost 40 million customer credit card numbers to some overseas attackers during a Christmas shopping season. And then an ad hoc group in that novel, led by a bald-headed IT contractor named Jerry Barkley, figured out a way to fight back. Mm-hmm. So you'll want to buy the book, and I won't give away the story. Mm-hmm. And I had a good time writing that novel, and I found out that I enjoy writing. And so then I wrote Virus Bomb and published Virus Bomb last year. And in Virus Bomb, an overseas attacker launches another huge cyber attack, and the same Jerry Barkley stumbles into it, and then he tries to warn the world, and of course nobody believes him, because nobody believes cybersecurity people, because we all live in our basement and watch Star Trek reruns all the time. That's only 50% true, by the way. I live in the upstairs and I do watch Star Trek. And so then nobody believes Jerry, and he gets into terrible trouble, but eventually he has to step away from his keyboard and come face to face in the real physical world with some really, really, really nasty assassins. And he uses his ingenuity to figure out a way to win. And so I decided I like writing novels. That's pretty cool. So I'm gonna write more novels and figure out ways to get them published. And so get people to support my existing novels. That'll help me a lot writing the new stuff. And
That was interesting. You are very interesting. I want to go back. No, seriously, because you're the guy I need to call when I need things taken care of. I'm like, Greg, but that's a whole different.
I fixed more viruses and more computers than I can remember. I've seen a lot of them. I've seen a lot. I beat a ransomware attack once too. A ransomware attack where you visit the wrong website, or you open a bad email attachment, and the next thing you know, all your files are scrambled, and there's a message with a skull and crossbones. Send some money in Bitcoin to this whoever this is, and then we'll send you the key to unscramble all your stuff. I fought off an attack like that. We didn't pay any money to anybody. I know how to prep for an attack, and I can teach anybody in the world how to prep for such an attack. The way you do it is good backups. You have good backups, and you have your backups separate from your production stuff. So then if somebody pollutes your production stuff, go to your backups and restore it. And if businesses and people would do that, then ransomware would go away, because we wouldn't have to put money in criminals' pockets to make their attacks even better and more sophisticated. So there you go. That's not rocket science, it's quality.
Sharifa, can I say something?
Absolutely. Sure.
Yeah, I just, you know, we actually had
your friend and colleague's
husband company get cyber attacked, ransomware attacked, and you said, like, what do business owners, entrepreneurs need to know? One of the things Jen and I had to do and investigate, we now have cyber insurance, and that's mm-hmm. not something as a business that we would have ever thought to get. So, you know, taking what Greg said, this is real. And we, part of the cyber insurance was they did a review of our technology and give us a grade. And so I just recommend for all of folks who are running businesses, even if you're running a small business, it's worth it. And it's not that expensive. It's not like it's thousands and thousands of dollars.
And so insurances, right? Actually, I think.
Yeah. So just Greg, I mean, it's so real. And I think those of us who are running our own businesses, we're just like, well, you know, I go, well, I have a Gmail. I don't have to worry about anything. And today, I think today they announced that both in the Trump campaign and in the Biden campaign, they're their folks are getting targeted from hackers from around the world. Like,
no kidding. Why is that even a surprise?
Exactly. So it's not, it's in the, Greg, I love the fiction, and Sharifa, and we as business owners, that this is our issue now. It's not for Target. It's not Target's issue.
No,
it's my issue.
It's everybody's. I cannot make you safe. And there's nobody on the planet that can make you safe. You make yourself safe. I can teach you what you need to know, but it's up to you. I can teach you how to pound the nail. It's up to you to pound the nail. That's the metaphor. And if you're a small business and you find yourself on the wrong end of one of these attacks, you'll call the FBI. And I'm sure a lot of nice people will commiserate with you, and they'll tell you about all the toll-free numbers you can call, and they'll send you to websites with all kinds of helpful advice. But the long and the short of it is that helpful advice is mostly worthless, and you're mostly on your own to recover. Law enforcement won't lift a finger. And that's true for identity theft victims and other stuff like that. I collect those stories. I have them on my website. Anybody anywhere can read them. They tear my guts out sometime, but you must protect yourself. No one else is going to do it for you.
Someone said the word safe, and I want to kind of say something that I wish I would have realized when I first began. Mm-hmm. You said the word safe, right? Do not use the same password for everything, right? But I like the word safe, and something I wish I would have learned when I first started was, when you land a client, to kind of switch the, I didn't mean to switch the topic, but I love this passionate thing is I did this when I first started, was I landed a client. Now I took their money. And then now I started responding a little slower because I started to get other leads. And like something I wish someone would have told me when I first began was, it's, what is that thing? It's 10 times easier to resell to someone.
Take care of the existing customers, because it's a lot less to retain than it is to go find new. I forget the exact saying, but I know where you're going.
Yeah. Take care of the existing ones. Know their birthdays. Know if they have a dog. Yep. Know what wants. No, like, be a friend. Don't just be a vendor. And I feel like I wish someone would have told me that when I first began, give your people that use your service, give them a weekly update. Even if there's no update, literally saying, hi, there's no update is still an update, right? Yeah. Just keep them. The worst thing that we did is we would take their money and then their project would take 6 months and we wouldn't email them. So it doesn't look like we're working, right? So that's the one thing. Hopefully that kind of makes sense. People that are just beginning out, don't take someone's money and then just fall off the map. Like, literally, to the people only, remember the first thing you do and the last thing you do. That's like the last thing someone does is so underrated. So when we are done with something, we actually send them like a thank you box. We send them a mug. We send them their favorite candy. If they have a dog named Scott, I don't recommend with Scott. We put their dog's name on a dog bowl. So now every time they feed their dog, they think of us.
Do you have databases with all that stuff?
So
first name, last name, birthday, spouse's name, dog's name, kid's name.
Whenever we onboard someone, absolutely, we have fun with it. Name, details. What's your favorite song? What's your favorite Starbucks drink? Do you have a dog? How many kids do you have? And now we do random things for them. We will send them a Starbucks card. We'll send them, like I said, a dog bowl with their name on it. If we mess up, which, we all mess up at times, we now have a plethora of personal details that now we can say, hey, I'm sorry, I messed up, here's XYZ. So that's just something that I wanted to kind of say, is get personal details. And I thought of that because you guys were talking about the stealing of personal details, but get personal details of who they are, what they love, and that stuff.
Yep. And the next thing I was going to tell you was protect that database, because that's personal information about your customers. You need to know that. But somebody from overseas does not need to know that. And bad guys will find value in buying and selling that data. And so I hear so many business owners that tell me, Greg, I'm not into national security. What do I need to do all this stuff for? And There's a couple answers to that. One of the answers is somebody out there wants to scramble your files and make you pay them money to unscramble it. That's one answer. And the other answer is, you're right, your data, the data that you keep, might not be all that interesting to anybody. But if a bad guy can use you as a drone in an attack against a juicier target, then you're still part of the problem, because you're helping a bad guy to attack somebody else. So protect that stuff. And I'll give you an easy to remember, really, really, really dumb rhyme. It's called care and share to be prepared. That's everything everybody needs to know about cybersecurity wrapped up in 7 words. Mm-hmm. I had an organization leader say, Greg, don't give me all this detailed technology stuff. I don't do technology. Tell me what I need to know in 25 words or less. Like, yeah, right. You're the one who studied Greek and learned how to read the Bible in Greek, and I'm supposed to tell you this in 25 words or less. Yeah, right, Bruce. So but then I came up with my little rhyme.
Care, I hope Bruce share. Is not watching.
I hope he is watching, because I give Bruce grief about that all the time. Bruce and I are good friends. We're care and share to be prepared, and I think that's 7 words. So I still have a whole bunch more that I could fill in if I wanted to. So you remember that. Care enough about your own security to actually do something about it instead of just talking about doing something about it. And then share what you learn liberally, and demand everybody else share what they learn liberally too. If we all shared what we learned, and that includes sharing our mistakes and that includes sharing our glitches, then we all get stronger. I can tell you that bad guys spend all day long probing us, and they spend all night long collaborating with each other to make tomorrow's probes better. We isolate ourselves into islands and we don't collaborate. And that's why we keep making the same mistakes over and over and over again. Care and share to be prepared. Just remember that. That packs everything you need to know when we unpack it and dig deeper.
It's simple. The only thing I need to know is how to find Greg. In case of this stuff happens, I'm gonna call you, because I like just calling people to solve all my problems. Yeah. That's just who I am. I did have a question for Trevor. I like your energy, but it seems to me when I was listening to Gina and Jen talk that in a certain way you have incorporated a lot of those laws into what you do. I heard Jen, I believe it was, mention the stories, and I was like, oh, that sounds like Trevor. That seems like a theme today in the stories. What were your thoughts or feedback to the 7 laws that Gina and Jen mentioned?
Man, so you guys, there was one quote that you said, it was something like, I am me, or what was that one? There was something about I am me.
I'm enough.
I wanted to put that on my wall in 100 font. Like it was, I am enough. I think that's that can apply to anyone. That's kind of goes back to our first question, right? Is I am enough. And it's like, how can you let prospects know maybe that, like, I am me, I am enough, I'm the way I am. I thought I would have to be this corporate robot in a suit. I've never worn a suit ever. I come in this. At expos, we wear bright red shirts, so we stick out. So it's just, I think that I am enough thing kind of resonated with me. Like, how does somebody tell their story saying that, right? Like, for me, I got C's in high school. I wasn't the cool kid. I would eat lunch with my video teacher. Like I wasn't, and I thought I had to. Telling that story really resonates with people. And I would say I really like that I am enough, and that's, I love that. Yeah.
Great feedback. What do you think of that feedback, Jen?
Well, I mean, you know, I've been in this business for almost 30 years. Wow, I just totally dated myself, but since college. And one of the deepest conversations that's at the source of, you know, people come with, this isn't working and that's not happening and whatever, my team this or whatever they enter the conversation with. And as Gina said, we like to go underneath that first layer to get to the whole person. And at the source, you know, the bubbling up from the spring, from the ground, is a huge sense of not enoughness, unworthiness, inadequacy, not enough time, not enough money, not enough resource. In organizations, it's not enough resources and not enough top talent and not enough this and not enough that. We're in a trance of not enoughness as a society. So that's what I think of it. I think it's at the heart of a tremendous amount of our suffering. And then what we do to fill that hole is the culture that we have. We eat, we drink, we porn, we sex, we shop, except not now. We hate each other, we divide, we do all of those things to be okay at some level. And none of it works. And so we do more of it. Or a little bit of it works, you know, like this tiny little taster morsel. The cookie tastes good for a second, but once it's digested, you got to have another cookie, get the feeling back.
Mm-hmm.
Or you got to go shopping again to get the feeling back, or whatever it is. You got to have sex again to get the feeling back. So, or you got to hurt somebody to get the feeling back of powerfulness or belonging or mattering or whatever. So none of it works. So that's what I think of it. I think it's a huge, you know, there was... Gina mentioned Buddhist teachers. There are a lot of Western meditation teachers who've spent a lot of time with the Dalai Lama. And it is reported that when they discussed the endemic nature of our sense of not enoughness or inadequacy, the Dalai Lama looked at them and said, well, what is that? Like, it's not everywhere. It doesn't have to be this way. But it is one of the biggest diseases of our time, is people don't know who they are. And Trevor, in some way, you're asking people to show who they are and have that be sufficient to the task of, I'm one of 23 million Google searches, but I'm here. And, what is here is sufficient to get the job done. It's adequate. It's enough. And I belong enough to those 23 million people to count. And I'm going to show you a little bit of that. And that's going to signal the right people for me to be my clients, my customers, my constituency. And there really are enough humans for all of us. That's another piece of the enoughness. There's enough work to go around.
And going off what you said, when I first started, I'm sure with all of us, we like tried to serve everybody, right? We would lower our price. We cut everything in half. I wanted as many clients as I possibly could, right? But as we all know, that works at the start, right? But as you grow and scale, you need to really figure out, well, how do you not work with 100 people at 1,000 apiece? How do you find 10 people at 10,000 apiece, right? Mm-hmm. If that math equaled out, I think it and you said the word no, which I really liked. I used, like, when I first started, the no's would like hit me, like, how do they not, wow, they didn't choose me for their wedding video or their corporate video, like, man. Now I when someone says no, A, you just saved my time, A, now I can move on. But also a no is just a no now. It doesn't mean it's a no 6 months from now. So what tools, what things can you set in place to follow up? Some of our best leads, it's been 3 years of me following up. And so a no is just a no now. That's not a no forever, but take that no. I ask everybody that says, hey, it's not a good fit or you're too expensive. I say, hey, I'd love some feedback. Why did this not work out? Most people don't write back, but the couple that do, it's actually very honest. Like, Trevor, you know, your videos are too expensive. I found someone local that can do what you do. We don't need all the shabam that you guys offer. We just want a simple iPhone video. I was never going to win that deal in like first place, right? Yeah. So I say,
and
thank you.
The pre-sale, you'd lose. And if you wouldn't want to win it because the pre-sales would cost you more than the project that
Brian
would bring in.
Yep. And if a client or a prospect, I'm sure we've all had some people that we didn't trust our gut, they were really difficult at the front, right? Yet we still brought them on, right? And if we're all smiling, because we all can think of one person that we're like, God, I shouldn't have brought them on. And so now we have to learn to trust our gut, because if somebody is being rude to you or doesn't trust you or like trying to get you down by $10 on your first deal, they will be difficult, if that's the right word, the entire time. So I actually think that's a red flag. If someone's first thing is, I don't have time to see your videos, I just want to know how much you cost. We're never, ever, ever going to win that. But at the front, I thought I could. So I think my summary of all that ramble is just take a no, ask why it's a no and learn from it, but also set something up where you can follow up with them every 6 months for the next 10 years.
I think that's wonderful advice. I mean, yeah. I saw a lot in there, but I love your passion, Trevor. I definitely do. I love your passion. I like the whole no is a no now, because I'm big on overcoming objections. You know, that's one of the things I'm really good at. I can turn a no or a no now into a yes. I'm love just that. like that dogged determination. The other thing is, I have this thing, and the people who know me know that I'm honest and real. I have an irritation fee, right? Let me explain my irritation fee.
I have one too.
You with me right there, Gina, right? See, that customer that I know initially is going to be difficult and all my red flags are going off, I'm like, oh, they need an irritation fee, because I don't want to say no to them. I don't want to not work with them, because I still want their business. But I just incorporate, like I did a website design for one lady one time, and she did almost the same thing. I tell all my website design clients the exact same thing. I'm good on spiels, just like my pre-show spiel. I have a website design spiel. And part of my spiel is, go find three websites that you like, and show me what you like, you know, what your style is. It doesn't even have to be in the same industry. It could be a different industry, but maybe you like the color scheme. Maybe you like the navigation. Maybe you like the way they write the words, right? Go find what you like and bring it back to me. She was like, no, I'm too busy. I don't have time. I know you'll make it perfect. Oh, yeah. I'm like, oh, this lady's about to irritate me. Right, she's going to irritate me. So guess what? She gets an irritation fee. So I charged her another $1,000 extra on top of what I was charging her. And she was like, that's fine. Money's no object. Good, because you're going to pay this irritation fee. So every time she calls me and every time she irritates me, I go, thank God for the irritation fee. And then I can give her my best as far as customer service, because she's paying to irritate me. That's a little help for you, Trevor.
No, I would love to know what that is typed on your contract.
It's included in the bill. So if the bill was going to be $2,500, now it's $4,000, because they about to irritate me. It's just one service that they paying for, but enclosed in the service is the Sharifa Hardy irritation fee. You was with me, Gina. Talk to them. Tell them. They don't know.
I said that's such a system move.
It is.
And it's so funny. I've definitely had clients who I'm like, man, they're so great, but they should I have signed them? But I also can flip that and be like, yeah, they're kind of being annoying, but man, they paid my office rent that month. Or yes, they're annoying my team a bit, but man, they've given us X amount the past 5 years. That paid for our advertising for the year. Mm-hmm. So like, we're not saying to not sign people that are a little too much. We're saying the red flags that are just, if they ever yell at you, they will yell the entire
irritation
time.
Fee.
Never sign
yelling them. Irritation fee.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Like all things balance.
I would say, you know, we're in our 12th year of running our own business, and it really has this walking the path. And when the economy starts to dip, you can start to notice your standards start to drop, like, oh, am I gonna have enough money? And it really is this fine line of who is the right client for me. And some clients, as I like, we fall in love with, and some are just fine clients and some are irritating, and you gotta find your path. And I agree, and the power of saying no, because if you're saying no over here, you're saying yes to something else, mm-hmm. and that you might not even know what you're saying yes to. And I think this is the art of being an entrepreneur. Like, mm-hmm. this is what they don't teach you in business school.
That's right.
You know, you've got a, that is a gut feel that Jen and I know well now, but it, we're 12 years in into mm-hmm. this particular business and how we run.
Yes, I'm the same way. I built my first website in 1994. So over 26 years, I kind of got a feel for different people. Now, I don't give everyone an irritation fee at all. It's the people who truly irritate me. Like this lady, I told her to find three websites and she didn't want to do it. But then when I designed the website, she was like, you know, that's not what I wanted at all. And I'm like, okay. But I had to redo the website.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So because I've done it twice, it's okay because I've allowed up front to that cost because I already knew I was going to have to do extra work. So I just build that in. But yeah. I also, like you said, Trevor, I know when a customer is going to be an issue. That's a different from an irritant. An irritant you can live with, but someone who I know is going to give me headaches or problems, I learned that I don't have to take on every client just because the rent is due or that employees. No, this person is going to cause me too much trouble down the line. And I'd rather just say, you know what? Maybe I'm not for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think our energy, I know we're getting close to ending. There are clients that cost too much. Like there is no fee that they could pay.
Yes.
It's worth it, mm-hmm. right? And knowing that I think takes time, as we're all saying, as small business owners. And, but it's important to know that. The other thing is so much, at least our business, I don't know about you guys, but people come because other people told them to come.
Yes. Yes.
Or we're in an organization and the coaching's going really well as exhibited by the person walking around being different in the organization. And then somebody else is like, I want that person to coach me.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have a client that you are really struggling with, you're like less likely to get a lead out of that experience because it's not going well for you mm-hmm. or the customer or client. So there are business reasons to say no to something that you think is going to be too costly or just
sure.
it's not going to forward the whole thing, the whole shebang.
Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. That's one of the things that I have definitely learned because I get the majority of my business through referrals and they call and they all say the same thing for years. Sharifa, I don't know exactly what you do, but Greg said, ask Sharifa. And then that's how this whole conversation starts. And we could go on forever, but I need to start my weekend. Okay. So we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who's watching live, as well as everyone who's watching in the archives, and let them know what you like for them to take away from your appearance. And we're going to go ahead and start with you, Gina.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. What I'll say is know that you are enough and it's okay to rest and take care in this moment.
Thank you. Beautiful. Jen?
Well, I'd like them to take away the link to our website.
Oh, there you go.
.com.
That's the website plug. That's what I was waiting for.
Yeah, there you go. SevenStonesLeadership.com. And on our homepage, there's a way to get to our online community and check out what we're doing there and buy our book and all that great stuff. So
you betcha.
And everything Gina said too.
Books are good.
Books are good.
I love books.
Which brings us to you, Greg.
Cool. Find out stuff about cybersecurity and lots of stuff. Go to dgregscott.com. D as in Daniel, dgregscott.com. And today is Friday. So this is a great day to read a couple books, to read Bullseye Breach and to read Virus Bomb. Read the books, start today, because then you can stay up all night. And by the time Monday gets here, you'll be recovered from your jet lag. And then write a great review on Amazon because you're going to love reading my books. And then so read my books and support this stuff. And then I'll write more books and we'll start this whole cute, cool, virtuous circle. So there you go. Learn and read. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. You're a great marketer, Greg. Like you did the whole process. I'm like, that's how it's done. You'd allow for the whole weekend to read this book, but don't forget the review. Where can people pick it up again? You said
anywhere you can buy books. You can Amazon, Barnes and Noble, any book retailer anywhere. It's either it'll be in their catalogs.
Fantastic.
Arts too, so throw it in the cart at the same time.
Say that again.
Art book too, is that?
Oh, yes, you betcha. Yeah, what's the title of your book?
Yeah, put it in the cart at the same time, the seven laws of enough.
Yeah, seven laws
of enough.
Of
enough.
Yeah. Seven laws of enough. Okay, thanks. I've only got one good ear, so you have to say stuff a bazillion times for me to hear it right.
I'm going to come hang out with you, Greg. You're funny. Trevor, what do you have for us? Take us out.
Take us out. Okay, so our website is corporatefilming.net. If anyone needs any marketing videos of your story, we love to do that over Zoom even. During COVID, we make it look professional and cool. I would say my one thing I want to leave people with, and I literally had this on my wall when I first was scaling this, was I believe work ethic beats talent every single time. So, and I live by that. So I believe someone that works 80-hour weeks will beat someone in the market that knows more than them. So just work. I really believe as people that own their own business, we don't really have an option to be done at 4 or wake up at 9. Like, I really don't believe you will ever scale if you have that mindset. So just work, work, work.
I have a blog post. I have a blog post for you. Just search.
I know you might want to check out Mike. Is it Mike Ferris? Somebody.
I love that guy. Yep.
The 4-hour work week. He would have something to say to you in response, my friend. But anyway.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that because I don't really know how to tackle that. I think our last question here, isn't the four hour work week meant for larger companies that have a lot of staff, or no?
No, it's not. Is it intended to be a guide for all people in business? Yeah. It is a mindset. And I think that's the most important thing. So this is the show that's going to keep going. Because you just, like, I could go on just about the last question that you just asked. Like,
I know.
That would take all of us another hour. But in order to solve that problem, I'm going to invite all of you to come back. We'll talk some more. We'll answer some more of the questions. We're going to take you through business 101, Trevor, in a way you never get in college or in school. We're going to be like, nope, go this way, go that way, and you'll be successful. But I want to thank all of you for tuning in today, or for joining me today. Sorry. Thank you for all my guests for joining me today. I want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch the show live, as well as everyone who's watching in the archive. But please go ahead and share this show, because we have shared so much information. I was amazed. I was blown away. It was a great show to end a great week. Now, if you are interested in being a guest, please visit the website at asksharifah.com. Until Monday, everyone have a safe and a blessed weekend. Bye now.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.